As many of you know, this is the time of year when communities around the world are in the midst of what is called Lent. As a Catholic kid, and I know I'm not the only one here who grew up in the Catholic tradition, as a Catholic kid, my memory of it was giving up candy, and we had to eat fish on Fridays, and it usually was fish sticks on Fridays. And I still actually am not entirely sure why the fish part, I don't know. But I'm sure that these kinds of things, I know they do, they matter to many, many, many people in this world who are observing this particular time leading up to the Easter season. When I got older and I became a pastor in seminary and really started studying history and texts and going deeply into these stories of our lives, I realized how much I love the story of Jesus going into the desert for 40 days. And he does it before he returns to the world to take on his role as a spiritual leader among his people. This is a total aside, and I thought it would probably be good to have a little levity this morning. One of the other things I've always loved or been curious about in terms of the story of Jesus's life is that from the ages of about 13 to 30, nothing is recorded about what was happening in his life. A lot has been speculated, and John Prine in particular wrote a very funny song called Jesus the Missing Years, and I encourage you to look it up and listen to it because it's really great. So, according to the desert story, Jesus goes into the desert for 40 days and he doesn't eat while he's there. And while he's there, he experiences three temptations. First, he's tempted to turn a stone into bread. And then the temptation is something like, throw yourself off the temple. Let's see if the angels actually show up to save you. And then the third temptation was, if you worship me, some version of the devil, if you worship me, then you can have all this. This entire kingdom will be yours. Of course, it's very difficult to imagine that any of that actually took place. 40 days in the desert with no food and several extremely challenging temptations. We humans would assume that he would end up dead or leaving sooner than later. Of course, we know that none of it is meant to be taken literally. We know that. The going into the desert story is the story of every single one of our lives and the times when things get very dry and barren and scary, and our character is tested during those times. The times when we are given the opportunity to grow weaker or stronger, depending on the choices that we make. Those three temptations from that story represent the very things that we all face in our lives. Food, our hunger for comfort, our need to be seen, our desire to have control. These are human situations, problems that we face in our lives over and over again, especially when we've gotten to a certain stage of life. Jesus, historically and in the mythologies and stories, was absolutely not the only one who went into the desert. It happens all the time in the great stories. The great thinkers, the wise ones, have all done some version of this. Buddha leaves the palace and wanders. Moses goes wandering. Muhammad retreats to the cave. There is some version of leaving society and going off to encounter the self in those quiet, barren places. Theologian and philosopher Joseph Campbell mapped what he called the hero's journey by looking at all the great mythologies, and what he saw was that they followed a very similar trajectory, very much like the desert story. A person leaves ordinary society and enters into some kind of liminal space. Campbell called this the crossing from the known into the realm of the trial. In that space, there's a testing that happens, the appetite, the ego, the need for power. In Campbell's language, this is the confrontation with the shadow and false paths of our lives. Then there is the slaying of those personal dragons, and the circle completes with the return to society and the teachings of what one has learned along the way. So most certainly we can reject the ancient stories all they want, calling them preposterous. We could say they're nonsense. But the truth of the matter is that we're all living them unconsciously all the time. The hero's journey is the story of our lives. And if you take the time, and it's a wonderful thing to try to do, to actually map your own life, you'll see the patterns that form. Look at the ways that you have responded during challenging times. What did you learn during that time? Where did you end up when you came out of that challenging time? Many of us in our lifetime enter the desert against our will. This is the nature of life. A divorce, a death, an illness, the loss of something like a career, the loss of a dream, the loss of a friend. All of us, at one point or another, will enter into the desert. Usually it happens against our will. It comes in all kinds of forms, this desert, but one thing is for certain. We will find ourselves there at some point, probably many, many points in our lives. Every desert that we encounter comes with lessons embedded in it. Every single one has lessons. So the day that we begin to ask the question, what is this here to teach me, is the day that we begin to grow spiritually. When we stop seeing ourselves as victims and we start seeing the desert times of our lives as our teachers, that is the day we really step onto the spiritual path toward growth. When we move from asking, why is this happening to me, I'm a good person, I do all the right things, why is this bad thing happening to me? And we start to ask, what has this come to teach me? Or a step further, why is this happening for me? What does my soul need? Is it time for me to begin to integrate into my existence? When that starts to happen, when we start to reframe the question that way, that's when we're really and truly awake. We are waking up, and then we can begin to see the world all around us all the time for what it really is, which is the great classroom of the soul. The deserts of our lives, we can either embrace them or we can avoid them. They're going to happen no matter what. I mean, that's really the bottom line. We get kicked into them often against our will. We don't want someone to die. We don't want someone to go away. We don't want to lose the job. We don't want to lose the identity. But it's going to happen eventually. The deserts of our lives arrive, and they come with very, very, very important lessons embedded in them. And the task that we have as human beings who are hopefully here to grow spiritually, the task that we have is to look directly into the heart of the desert and ask the question, what is this here to teach me? This is the story of being a human being. If you try to avoid them, they'll keep following you, I promise you. If you try to avoid the deserts of your days, the hard times, the challenging times, it's going to happen, it's going to keep happening until you're ready. Until you're ready spiritually to take a careful look at what it's about. To a large degree, our modern life is engineered to prevent the desert wilderness from happening, more so than ever. Everyone have a phone near them right now, close to them? Do you panic when you leave home without the phone? Do you panic when you've left the phone in the car? Our modern life is engineered to prevent the desert wilderness from happening. There are a gazillion ways that we all have to avoid suffering. Our lives are filled with distractions and addictions. Some of them are very simple. We're all addicted to something. Every single one of us is addicted to something. It might be coffee, caffeine, could be sugar. Our phones might be Facebook. The list goes on and gets larger and larger as we go. And it's very, very, very good. I encourage you to create awareness around your own addictions. What am I doing? What am I using to avoid doing the difficult work of spiritual growth? Several years ago, I decided to challenge myself. I gave up using my cell phone for 6 months. It was my January moving into a new year thing. So I had a landline. There was no danger. I have a laptop, so I was always connected. But I decided to stop using a cell phone for 6 months and see what it felt like. Anyone in here ever given up an addiction to anything? You know what it feels like? Yes. You feel it in your body when you try to stop an addiction. The first days are hard. They're wobbly. You're wobbly. I know this. I gave up drinking in 2011. I know how the trajectory goes. But eventually you round a corner and every single day gets a little bit easier. There was only one emergency during those 6 months. My son Sam called me on the landline and said, "Mom, I'm in the emergency room right now." And I said, "Okay, Sam, I'll get there as fast as I can," which I did, and nothing terrible happened. Otherwise, what I found during that time of not having a cell phone was that a kind of a peace descended into my life. It was really, really great. When I was in the car, I was really driving. I was really looking at everything around me. I feel I slept better. I felt more calm just in my body. Nothing terrible happened at all. I realized we rely on our phones far more than we actually have to, feeling like, well, I'm going to miss an important emergency or something, and it didn't happen. Everything was fine, and I actually felt like a better human being during that time. So I started this year by getting rid of every kind of social media that I had online. I closed everything down. It wasn't a lot, but it was Facebook and Instagram, and I had a website, and I shut everything down. And honestly, I think I can say that it makes me happier. It actually makes me happier. The turning point for me was when I was sitting looking at two very good friends of mine while they were getting a terrible diagnosis, and I was just watching them receive this news, looking at their faces, and I thought, I don't have a lot of time to look at that face. And indeed, I didn't. My friend Paul died within 3 months. I don't get to see his face anymore. So that was a big part of the reason why I decided no distractions. I don't want to look at strangers. I don't care what other people are doing. I know who I care about, and I want to look at them from now on. Subtracting the unnecessary things from our lives, it's really a good idea. This is a nice time of year. We're starting to maybe move from winter to spring. Maybe we change the clocks next week. Our days get longer. This is a really nice time to take stock of what it is in your own life that really matters. Not just what your distractions are, but what really matters to you. Sands of time are always running. Most of us, as I said, get shoved into the desert experience by the events of our lives. And it's a very rare thing to choose to go there. The way that people, for example, in monastic communities do, to choose silence, to choose to be separate from the world. But we can, in our own lives, and we should, intentionally create conditions of simplicity and solitude. And I really do believe, whether you call it Lent or not, it doesn't even matter. This is a really good time to create some of those desert conditions in your life. Choose to create them. Pay attention to your habits, to your addictions. Cut back on your distractions so that you have more time in your life for quiet. Go outside more often. Spend time alone more often. Figure out who you are. The only way to do that is by being alone. In those desert conditions, you can begin asking the really important questions like, what matters? What actually matters? What am I doing that feels empty? And during that time, clarity begins to emerge, ironically, through subtraction. Get rid of the things you really, really don't need. And it is in the process of subtracting that you will find clarity. Once you've quieted a lot of the noise in your life, then you can identify the spiritual lessons that your soul is really trying hard to work on. What is this death here to teach me? What is getting older trying to teach me? What is caring for this sick person trying to teach me? 40 days in the desert indeed does sound like a really terrible idea. And it might even sound silly to some of us, but it's not meant to be taken literally. It is a map of human maturation. If we avoid the deserts of our lives, we are literally robbing ourselves of the opportunity to grow. Every single life moves through these changes, moves through exposure, through hunger, through choices that have to be made, and hopefully, in moving through those stages, there is clarity and growth as a result. Terrible things are going to happen no matter how nice we are. It doesn't matter how well we live our lives. The part that's ours is the choice. How do we respond? Do I run? Do I fill that empty space or those dark days with all of my great distractions? Or, in some cases, do we try to give our pain away to somebody else? How do I deal with it? Or do we allow the challenging times to work their holy alchemy on us? Allow the challenging times to work their holy alchemy on us. It is the best gift that you can give yourself. This season, this time of year, no matter what you observe or don't observe, this season offers a really beautiful invitation to contemplation. And so hopefully each one of us will accept that invitation and do the work and prepare ourselves. We might be in a desert right now, we might not be. There no doubt will be another one somewhere down the road. Are we going to be ready for it? Why is this happening for me?